Hello and welcome to episode number 3 of Splash Pad, a TCU on SI podcast focusing on the TCU women's basketball team. I'm your host, Tori Couch, and I'm joined by the voice of Killer Frogs, JD Andrus. We are recording on Monday, December 9, following TCU's game against South Carolina. The Horned Frogs lost 85-52 yesterday and are now 9-1 on the season. Now, welcome in, JD. JD, how are you doing today?
It's 2 weeks before Christmas. Didn't get my Christmas gift yesterday with TCU win, but we're here to talk about some women's basketball, so can't be all that bad.
No, not at all. Yeah, yesterday was a tough game, and we're going to dive right into that one. One thing of note, TCU was number 9 in the polls going into that game. With the loss, they are now number 12. Did drop a little bit. We were talking a little bit before the podcast. Notre Dame got a nice win over some ranked teams, so that's, I think, helping TCU's case. So dropping 3 spots after losing to the defending national champ, that's not terrible. So let's jump into South Carolina. There's no way around it. This was not a fun game to watch. It was tough. As head coach Mark Campbell said after the game, it served its purpose, which is to help TCU see where it is in preparation for March. It was a really good learning experience for this team and gave them a good idea where they are right now. It looks like it could be a game after the first quarter, but South Carolina kind of took over after that first quarter, and it just was never really close after that.
Yeah, I mean TCU, especially up until 2 minutes left in the second quarter. I think the big difference maker and the kind of the change of the entire tone was the Ashlyn Watkins dunk that we'll talk about later. But I think up until that point, TCU was kind of would go on scoring runs where they'd kind of make it within 12, 10 points that it looked like, hey, you know what? Maybe they're gonna stay in this thing for the whole thing. I don't think really at any point throughout the first quarter that I realized, hey, you know what? TCU really has a chance to win this thing. Because it was just evident from kind of tip off that South Carolina is just on a different level, as you kind of expect them to be. TCU didn't play their best game at all. But I think it was just, like you said, it served its purpose. It did what we wanted it to do. If you had told me before the season that they'd go 2-1 against South Carolina, Notre Dame, and NC State, we both would have taken that and been happy with it. And I think it kind of, not that we're not happy with it, but it's more like we saw what happened the first two games and you kind of wanted a little bit more out of this one. It's the only reason you're somewhat upset by it. Other than that, I mean, just to even be 2-1 in a top ranked team, even going into this matchup was better than anything we anticipated going into the season.
I agree with you on that. And to your point about the way this game went, being 2-1 is probably better than what most TC fans could have hoped for with those 3 ranked games. If this game had been a 15-point loss, I think we just feel a little bit different about it. The fact that it was, 33 points and just never felt close, kind of midway through that second quarter and on, that's what makes it so tough. One thing I saw that really bothered TCU was South Carolina's physicality. And that to me is a sign of a team that's mature, played together a lot. They know how to play off each other. They're not afraid to kind of get dirty, make those hustle plays, and that their physicality really bothered TCU. I was able to ask Haley Van Lith about that after the game, and she said, yeah, they were so physical that she had no clear passing lanes. They kind of sped her up, forced her to play at a pace that she wasn't comfortable with. It just made it really tough for her to get the ball when she was trying to catch it. And I think you saw throughout the game that just kind of had a domino effect on TCU.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even the fact that like there were no clear passing lanes. It was just, she was the fifth leading rebounder on the team, and she still had a clear height advantage. It was just like she seemed completely off of her A game, so it was odd. I know you talked about the physicality of South Carolina, and obviously, you could tell the girls were fighting back and forth. There were multiple times where Sedona herself was just getting completely boxed out from the paint, which is super uncharacteristic of her. I think that's one of those where you kind of, I don't want to say expect better, but expect more of the, you see the veteranness come out from Sedona, where it's kind of like, hey, you know what? If the pick and roll's not going to work, I'm not going to be able to do anything offensively. Let me focus on the boards. Because you have to still provide something in that field. Haley Van Lith was still playing her absolute butt off and was single-handedly keeping TCU in it for the first half, or at least keeping it respectable for the first half by herself. So I think that's just one of those where it's you got to find some way to become a major factor whenever you get taken out of the game. And we talked about that when we did the preview, is that what, you know, Dawn Staley's going to obviously have something cooked up for Sedona. And she did. She was getting doubled often. She was just wasn't given her free rein like she was even against NC State and Notre Dame. So I think it's good that a game like this happened really early in the season. And it's just only going to become better from here.
Yeah, and that's exactly what Campbell was talking about after the game, that they knew they had achieved a lot already, but they knew they had a long way to go to get to where they want to be. And South Carolina, yeah, they're number three in the nation right now, but they're the defending champs. And you saw why on Sunday. They're just the composure that they had anytime TC went on a little run, didn't faze them one bit. You could tell that this is a team that's played together a lot versus TCU is a team that's really good and will still have a great season, but they're not experienced as a group. They have individuals who are experienced, but not the group as a whole. And I think that showed quite a bit yesterday.
I think TCU also kind of got the short end of the stick, right? Like they played a South Carolina team that's playing with the chip on its shoulder, surprisingly. I mean, after the loss and they got dropped in the rankings, and then everyone's talking about, wow, well, look at TCU and what they're doing. Maybe they're going to upend South Carolina. Like you're playing a team that quite literally hadn't lost a game for an entire season. And then comes in, loses one, and now it's like they're the underdogs as they view themselves. And that's scary to do whenever they have as much talent as they have.
Yeah, well, and last podcast we talked about Iowa State was the first game that South Carolina played following that loss and just completely blew out Iowa State. Well, now that I've watched South Carolina in person, I just think it's because South Carolina is that good. I don't know that that speaks so much to if Iowa State is bad or good or something like that. It just speaks to how dominant South Carolina is. And to your point, they've got that chip on their shoulder now. And if they're already that good, they're just going to take things to another level.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's you're obviously hoping to get a rematch at some point, and when March Madness happens, and I just it's one of those where you're two games away from conference play now. We're going to talk about that later. Like, I don't expect Mark Campbell to let it affect the team at all, but I am worried slightly on what it does to Sedona because of her confidence level just during the game alone. That if she starts to become a little bit more timid. That's the only thing that's really even concerns me about this. Other than that, like everyone came out of the game healthy, which is the best thing you can ask for in a blowout like that. I mean, yeah, I mean, you can't really do anything about that, right? Like you had one double digit point scorer for the entire game, and every single starter had a plus minus of worse than negative 15. Sedona was negative 36, the worst on the team. Haley was a negative 32. Addison Connor was a negative 36. Like, your three biggest names just. I mean, Haley had a great game, so I can't even take that away from her. But, like, Madison Connor couldn't get anything going. Sedona couldn't get anything going. Taylor Bigby did pretty much what you expect Taylor Bigby to do. So, like, I kind of like she what she did. I mean, outside of Haley, like, the second best player of the game, I don't know if you agree, it would be Agnes.
Yeah, I thought Agnes played really well. She didn't score a lot, but she was all over the boards, all over the floor, just the way she typically plays. Whereas Campbell was called before, she's the backbone of this team. And if you see her diving on the floor, you know there's trying. But I'm with you. I'm not overly concerned as far as what do I think this team's going to do down the road. I think they're going to regroup. I think they're going to still have a really good season. But I think Sedona, it's going to be interesting to watch her because this was an opportunity for her to kind of show herself on a national stage. I mean, they've done that already against Notre Dame and NC State, but on an even bigger national stage against players that if TCU wants to have a deep run in March, she's gonna have to beat out and comp or at least compete against. So I'll be interested to see as well kind of how she bounces back from this game. And you mentioned Madison Connor did not have a good game. She had a offensive foul where she pushed off. And when I saw that foul, I knew right there this team is frustrated. That was an obvious foul. It was a very frustrated foul. And that combined with the Ashlyn Watkins dunk were kind of two things that just was like TCU's just not, it's not their day, it's not their game.
Yeah, and that happens, right? Like it happens in every sport. Sometimes you just wake up and you just, I mean, TCU plays Georgia in the national championship and Georgia plays their best football game they played as a school in 25 years where everything's perfect. Like, yeah, South Carolina wasn't perfect, but you got probably the best version of them that I've seen this so far this season. Like everything was clicking for them and you got the worst version of TCU that we've seen all season. So I don't think that there's any cause for concern. I also don't think that it helps them when the flow of the game entirely is kind of just getting repeatedly chopped up by all of the travels that were called. There was a
Yes.
lot of whistleblowing in the game that interrupted a lot of the flow. And I feel that it just didn't help TCU be able to go on that run that we've seen them do in every game this season where they go on a hot streak of 20 plus points. Like they
Yeah.
just could never get going at any point.
Yeah, it was always something. It was a travel or a turnover or just something. And they couldn't get on that run. But I will say that, we've alluded to the dunk. That was pretty impressive. I will give South Carolina their due. That was an impressive play.
Yeah, I mean, I was sitting with our editor Barry and fellow writer Carson for the game, and that happened, and we all turned and looked at each other, and we're like, "Oh wow, like that's a different level right there." Like that's, I think, didn't expect to come to a women's basketball game and see a one-handed slam. Like that's not wasn't in my cards for the night, and it was at that point, like, I mean, you kind of saw it, right? Like throughout the court, like. TCU was giving their all, but it was just like South Carolina would just bring fresh legs off the bench who was just as athletic as their starters.
Yep.
Like it's a tall task, and we've talked about it all season about TCU starters have to be 100% for the entire 35 plus minutes that they're all on the floor. And South Carolina could just divide up their minutes and be like, you know what? We've got fresh legs. Like, let's see it. So I think that also didn't help with the score itself. Like, I mean, TCU's already frustrated in the second half. They can't get anything going. They're already beat up and tired. And then South Carolina's just like, yeah, let's just empty the bench. And I mean, we're the number one school and we've had the number one recruiting class for 4 straight years. Like, these players are going to be able to play.
Well, it's kind of like when you talk about like a Georgia in football, the guy at the end of their bench could start at almost any other Power Four program in the nation. They're just on the bench there because everybody else is that much better. I think you got a little bit of that with South Carolina. That's not to say TCU doesn't have talent and they can't build things up because I think Campbell is building up the talent there. But I think there was a little bit of that too. So it was interesting just to watch what a top tier program looks like in women's college basketball and to if that's where TC wants to be, to see how to get there and see what all those things entail.
Yeah, I think, and I know we talked about like the Mark Campbell versus Dawn Staley chess match that we expected to see. And I really don't think that we even really got to benefit from that because you didn't get to see anything happen in a close game. Like Mark Campbell's going to do the coach talk. Like I texted you yesterday about taking, the fall for what happened with Sedona and everything. Like that's what the coaches do. You expect that out of them. But sometimes, like, it's not like football where he's calling every single play and the players have to execute. Like he's installing a game plan. He expects the players to execute it. Sometimes it just doesn't happen. Like no matter who you are. I mean, South Carolina has a loss this year. Like it's just, I don't know. It's not that I haven't wavered at all in my confidence level. It's more so that this loss brought me back to earth because I kept talking about like, hey, I'm gonna book my flight. I'm gonna do it. And then it's like, you know what? There's levels to this that TCU is still working their way up towards.
Well, and you mentioned the coaching staff. Yeah, we didn't get to see kind of the end of game chess match where they're calling a timeout with 30 seconds left, drawing up a play type of thing. But the coaching staff is going to learn from this too. How to approach these kinds of games, what happens when things start to kind of get out of hand. Okay, what you said, maybe it didn't work, or how you prepared them, what you said at halftime. The coaching staff learns from these things too. So and that's just going to make TCU better. And so I just think all around it was just a huge learning experience. One thing that I think is really tough is they have a whole week off before they play their next game. You really, as a player, you're kind of like, man, I wish I had a game Tuesday or Wednesday to kind of just get this taste out of my mouth. Like, you sit on it for a week. And you don't want to sit on a game, especially a game like that, for a week. And so you kind of wonder, too, I'll be curious how they come out on Sunday, what their energy level is like.
Yeah, I mean, only other things about this game are one, the amount of South Carolina fans that we talked about before. It genuinely, like you said, like you questioned who was the home team after the dunk. Like it was kind of insane. But it was super, super cool to see, right? Like there were more fans for that game than there were for the men's game in the morning. Like it
Yeah.
was.
The official attendance on Go Frogs is 8,004.
Yeah, like that's amazing. Like Dante Lee said afterwards, like we could play a game on the moon and people would come watch. Like it's true. I mean, I had people at my regular 9 to 5 day job that were talking to me all week about the game that normally wouldn't even talk about women's basketball. They were excited about it. And I think it's just kind of like it's still like I say all that to say that this women's basketball team is still extremely special, and there's still a really big talk of the town. Like there were so many young boys and girls there that were super excited watching the dunk, and just like I saw a Caitlin Clark jersey. Like there's a lot of cool things, right? And it's still growing, and I'm really excited to see how the rest of the season goes. Surprisingly, also TCU did not have the worst performance of the night. That goes to Dickies Arena. Genuinely shocking how there were two teams on the court, and the venue is the one that puts up the least amount of numbers on the night. Carson and I left my house, which is 2.2 miles from Dickies Arena, at 5:15. We did not get to our seats till 6:15. It was not fun. There were multiple people throughout the lines that were echoing the same sentiment. I get it. There was another game before, but this is arguably the biggest game of that entire slate for the weekend. It is on primetime ESPN national television. And you were just kind of like, hey, started at 6 and everyone misses the entire first quarter.
Yeah, I got stuck in traffic as well, coming off of 30, that exit at Montgomery. I sat there for 30 minutes and I got in a little bit before you did. I didn't miss quite as much, but I got in late as well. I gave myself plenty of time to get there. And so it was tough to sit there knowing this is a huge game. Yeah, why can't things be flowing a little bit better on the on that side? And I think what it was people coming out from the previous game, and there just was not enough time in between games to clear out the traffic from one before the other traffic came in.
Yeah, like maybe I'm also just bitter that I sat through traffic for an hour just to watch this ending result. But like at the end of the day, like you do the Fort Worth Stock Show rodeo every day. Like there's no reason For 2 months, you do it every day. You do the fairgrounds, you do big concert venues. Like, you gotta expect a little bit better than this. So, I don't know. I just think it could have been a lot smoother. You could have had a packed arena at the start, and maybe it affects a little bit of the energy on the court. So, who knows, right?
Yeah. Yep. But that game is done. We're gonna jump back in time a little bit more. TCU did play Florida Atlantic leading into that game to jump out to that 9-0 start. They won 78-42. In that game, no TCU player played over 30 minutes. It was a really just good team effort. 32% from three. They did shoot 39% overall, which is well below their season average, but they didn't need to dominate shooting or anything like that against Florida Atlantic. They were just better athletes, better skill players, all those things. Haley Van Lith had 16 points, Prince had 14, kind of what we had come to expect. One interesting thing that I kind of found, they had 24 assists on 30 made shots. They've been really good this season on their assists and, finding each other, making that extra pass, getting the cleaner shot. And they're currently a top five team in assists per game and assist to turnover ratio. That's going to be big for TCU if they can keep that level of ball security and ball movement. They're going to be in a lot of games and continue to win a lot of games too.
Yeah, I mean, you did what you needed to do, right? You did get caught looking ahead to South Carolina. Only thing I have about it is I'm slightly starting to get worried on the field goal percentage. Like, I know it's not realistic to shoot 50% every single game, right? But three out of their last four games, they've shot decently well below their season average, below 40% on the last two games, below 45% against Notre Dame. Like, it's just like, not any cause for concern, but I just think it's interesting that we have seen their numbers start to dip a little bit. So, just something to kind of keep track of, keep an eye on, especially in the next two games that we'll talk about soon.
Yeah, and I think part of that's the competition. Like you said, Notre Dame was not one of their higher shooting percentage games. Part of the competition, they also started that game really slow. But it is an interesting thing to watch moving forward to see if that trend continues or if they kind of get back up and maybe level out a
Yeah.
little bit. Yeah. Well, let's look at those next couple games that we've kind of been alluding to. Like we mentioned earlier, they will have a week off before taking on Louisiana Tech on Sunday, December 15 at 2 p.m. And then they will face Samford Tuesday, December 17 at 6:30 p.m. That is not the end of the non-conference slate. They have one more non-conference game after they go to UCF for their conference opener, which we're going to dive into that one. UCF, they'll play them Saturday, December 21st at 1 p.m. UCF went 12 and 17 last season, including 3 and 15 in the Big 12. Last season, this is the game that TCU played after they had all the tryouts to fill out their roster. First game back from that whole situation, they ended up winning. So it was kind of a unique game last year against UCF. Kind of a big deal. Not quite the same situation going into it this year. It's the conference opener, and both teams are coming in with pretty good records. UCF is 7-2 overall. Interesting, their losses are UNLV and Montana State. They started extremely slow in both games. We're down double digits at the first quarter break. That's kind of where they're coming in from.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like UCF's one of the only few teams, right, in the conference that can keep up scoring wise with TCU. I don't think they'll be able to keep up on the defensive side or with Sedona as much, but I feel like they're one of the only other few teams who can actually keep up beyond the arc and just at the mid-range level that TCU can't. So the only thing that I'm kind of really interested in, especially because I just brought up about maybe the shooting percentage drops a little bit. And it's going to be their first road game. That's another thing to keep in mind. They have not played a true road game so far this season. So it'll be interesting to see what that kind of looks like for them. Good thing for them is there's no students on campus, right? So it's kind of something to really, you know, is it really even a true road game at that point? So it's just, yeah, I mean, I think the moral of the story for a lot of these games, right, especially in the conference, and up until you get to Kansas State and Iowa State, will just be that Sedona is going to have such a massive advantage in the paint that a lot of the games are just going to continue to play through her. So it's why we talked about earlier that we're not as worried about her because she's still going to get a lot of opportunities throughout the season. So, and I think this is especially one of them that she's just that much better and taller than everyone else in the conference that this is really where you'll see her get back to her near triple doubles and over 20 points per game.
Yeah, well, and you mentioned their scoring. UCF has Caitlin Peterson. She's a key returner from last year. She's scoring 22 points per game, and she was the Big 12's leading scorer last season. And I remember watching her last season and last year's game. Anytime she touched the ball, it felt like it was going in or it was going to be a really good look. So she's one that they definitely have to keep tabs on. They also brought in Hannah Gusters, a 6'6 center. She was at Oklahoma State last season. She was Oklahoma State's leading scorer last year. So I think she could at least give Sedona a little bit of a challenge. What's interesting is in the two games Oklahoma State played against TT last year, Hannah had 8 combined points. Only one of those games Sedona was in because Sedona was had the thumb injury that first game. So I'll be curious to see if Hannah's able to score a lot on her and kind of what that matchup is. I think that's going to be a matchup to watch in this game.
It's Caitlin Peterson was electric last year, by the way. I remember writing about her in the preview for the weekends, and she is insane. She's basically their Paley VanLith and their Madison Connor just combined. Like it's what she basically means to the team. Good thing is Haley VanLith is really good on the defensive side of the ball, right? Like Caitlin Peterson never had to play anyone that was as talented as Haley VanLith last season. So it'll be a real big test for her and Haley to see what they can do. I really, whenever it comes to this game, I just kind of want to see a big bounce back game and a big game from Madison Connor, right? Like she has had her struggles in the bigger games, especially against, she played well in the second half of NC State and had her struggles in the Notre Dame game until the fourth quarter. So I'd kind of really just like to see a complete game from her on the back end, especially if, you know, maybe let's say they play physical against Sedona again with the 6'6 center who's capable of it. Like it could be something that maybe the film's out on that and that's what they do. Like Madison has to be that one that takes that next big step up.
Yeah, I agree. I think Madison has not played a complete game yet this season against kind of those a more elite competition. I think if she can put that together, if you have her, Haley, and Sedona going at once, that's a really, really tough trio to stop. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about the South Carolina game too much again, but I think it is something that's interesting about when you go back and you watch and you look at the game as a whole. Like anytime Haley drove, or anytime Sedona got the ball, they immediately crashed, leaving Madison pretty wide open. And I think that just speaks to what Dawn Staley was like. You know what? She has to be the one that beat us. She hasn't been able to really put that full game together. And I think that if Madison does start to put those big games together, it's something that whenever you get to March, right, teams are going to have to start game planning if more. So then it opens up those inside lanes in that pick and roll.
So that's kind of where TCU is headed next. So, like I said, their next home game is going to be Sunday against La Tech. And then they'll have that home game on Tuesday, and then they'll go to UCF on December 21st. Now, as we're entering into conference play with that game, we decided we'll take a little bit of look at the Big 12 standings right now. Nobody is undefeated as we last week. TCU was the last standing undefeated team. That is no more. There are quite a few teams with one loss: Kansas State, Oklahoma State, TCU, Texas Tech, West Virginia, and Kansas. Kind of take a deep dive into those. The losses are to pretty good teams. You have a Duke on there. You have South Carolina on there. So there's some very respectable losses. And I think the teams that you're expecting it's going to have these one or two loss records is the teams that were picked to finish near the top of the conference. So it's kind of what people were expecting, at least as we get close to conference play.
I mean, it's the same way that kind of we talked about a little bit. Kansas State's really the only biggest threat in my eyes as far as who can really run the table, right? Because of their veteranness that they can also compete with TCU in that side. Other than that, I mean, the only like the sleeper team I'm really concerned about is Oklahoma State just because of their scoring ability. They have two games over 100 points this season. I know the competition they scored it against isn't the greatest, but still, like, it's something to be aware of. Like, if you can score, you can score. Doesn't matter how well you play defense. Sometimes basketball is kind of can just become a foot race. So, the Baylor games are going to be definitely noteworthy, just because it's always tough to play Baylor, and you've got them twice, and we've talked about it before, and I want to mention it again, is TCU has a very, very backloaded conference schedule. Like, there's a realistic possibility they're 8-0 in the first half of conference play, and then you just lose three straight because you got Iowa State, Kansas State, Baylor that you rattled off, like, hey, what happened? But it's like the schedule can be very deceiving for what can actually happen throughout the year.
Yeah, and if you are to enter that stretch 8-0, that's where I think you're going to start to kind of test and see how much did you learn from a game like South Carolina? Did you learn what you needed to get through a tough stretch like that, going 2-1 or 3-0? Those are the types of things that start to separate teams as you get into March and prepare for the tournament where it's one and done. You don't get the next week because it's conference play and you have 18 total games or whatever case might be, it's one and done. And so I think a stretch like that you're talking about, it's going to be very interesting to watch when it gets there to see what their record is leading into it and how they react when they're faced with kind of what we expect to be three of the best teams in the conference. When
Yeah,
I
I'm very excited though. I tell you that. Like, I think you see a lot of conference, especially in like the Big Ten and SEC is kind of getting there with Tennessee a little bit, but TCU is very top heavy conference as well, right? But the top four in the top of the conference are very, very good. All ranked teams that can do some damage come spring play. So I think it's good for TCU that they don't just have a cupcake of a schedule all throughout conference play, and they actually will get tested.
I was gonna say, for me, I think the team that stands out from the Big 12 is West Virginia. I agree with you on Kansas State. Another team, I should say, is West Virginia. Their only loss is by 5 points to Texas, who's ranked number six right now. Yeah, ranked number six. So that's another team that's going to give TCU a run for their money, could beat them. Last year, they were one of the best teams in the nation at forcing turnovers.
Yeah,
So,
now West Virginia should have probably also beat Texas. They were leading with like 2.5 minutes left, and then ended up losing that one. But yeah, I think it's gonna be a lot of fun to watch this conference play, and watch what TCU does. I think last year we were robbed of that because of all the injuries and everything. This is kind of gonna be the first real taste with Mark Campbell of a full conference slate.
No, I'm with you. I'm excited to see what they can do going into hopefully fully healthy, with the team that they plan on going into conference with. The sky can kind of still be the limit. because your non-conference, it can affect you for seeding for March, but it doesn't affect your ability to win the conference. It doesn't affect your ability to get into the tournament. You still kind of have all your goals ahead of you. So that's why I'm really excited about this team still, and think that there's no reason to be down too much after Sunday.
Yeah, I mean the two major things, right? Like women's basketball, you can the first few rounds are on campus, depending on your seating. So you play for that. One, it's huge for what women's basketball would mean for the city, and for Mark Campbell and his program. And two, like there's still recruits out there, right? Like you're gonna have to replace a lot of talent on this team next year. So if you can host a home game, like the number one player in the country is 4 hours away in Lubbock. Like, there's still a chance, right? And the other thing is you're not South Carolina. It's not natty or bust. Like, it's make a Sweet 16 and then see how far you can go from there.
Yeah, this program hasn't made the tournament in a long time. They probably would have gone in 1920 had there been a tournament, but unfortunately there wasn't. So it's been a long time since they've been. So like you said, the expectations are not through the roof, sky high. They're attainable. They're very attainable. Anything else you want to touch on with Big 12 or what's coming up for TCU, JD?
No, there is one more note we'll talk about, and that's kind of the only other thing that I wanted to discuss. But other than that, take the game, throw it away. You begin conference play. Whatever happened with the South Carolina, whatever had even happened with NC State and Notre Dame, say you lost all three. Doesn't matter. And it won't matter because conference is all that really kind of matters, right? Like those are 70% of your games that you'll be played, 65% of your total record. Like that's what really matters. And you're going to play a lot of ranked teams that are going to do a lot of good for your strength of record, your net rankings, all of that.
Yeah. So the piece of news that JD was alluding to is guard Maddie Scherr announced last week that she is going to sit out the season, take a medical redshirt with a back injury. And we kind of had been talking about the last couple of podcasts. What do you do when she comes back? You've got all these talented guards. She just kind of adds to what you have there. And she's elected to sit out the season, which I can understand that. I really can.
Yeah, back injuries are insanely hard to come back from the longer you don't let it heal. And the more you let it linger and you try to fight through it, the more it can end up hindering you throughout the rest of your career. But even more important than that is because I just talked about how much talent they're going to lose. Like, Maddie Scherr will put, I don't want to say for sure be your number one. She's still going to have Taylor Bigby and Donovan Hunter coming back too. But I mean, she's going to be the most veteran presence on this team. Of what she will be able to offer. So I think that is probably the best case scenario that TCU could have gotten for this.
Yeah, she does. She brings a lot of experience to a team that's going to lose a lot. But also, like you said, have Taylor Bigby back and Donovan Hunter back will be a little more seasoned at that point. So the good to see kind of a resolution to that, but obviously, I want the best for Maddie, her to heal completely and be ready to go full bore next season. Well, that's all we have for this week's episode. For JD Andrews, I'm Tori Couch. Thank you for listening to Splash Pad, a TCU on SI podcast. Until next time, have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, everyone.